From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, January 28th. We have traded in the friendly confines of the bar and come back to the studio.
Boo. Traded in whiskey for coffee.
Anthony's gone to the real hard stuff, the coffee, this morning.
Yes.
That's Anthony York from the Los Angeles Times. I'm John Myers from KQED. And so here we are in yet another discussion of the budget crisis and Governor Jerry Brown and the week that was. And let's just jump in rather than trying to be less than witty at the beginning.
Okay. I think we've succeeded at being less than witty.
That's
at the
kind
beginning.
Of what our calling card, isn't it? Less than witty. We
yes.
think we're witty. I wouldn't argue that a lot substantively changed this week. But the clamoring was either a little more intense, and then the poll we want to talk about may have changed the dynamic in some people's minds, some people not. But all in all, I mean, I would have to say I still think it was a fairly good week for the governor in the way that he is preaching the message and the way he's trying to push the message forward. Because the real things that happened this week, subcommittees of the legislature began to meet to pull apart the budget proposal. People began to complain, especially about the social services cuts. Mayors came up to complain about the redevelopment proposal to eliminate those agencies. And I think the governor continued to stay on his message, which is, hey, I don't like it either, but you got a better idea, bring it to me.
Right. Well, and you know, the redevelopment fight has really become the flashpoint of this budget debate for now.
Which is interesting, given how right. severe a lot of the suggestions are, not to mm-hmm. diminish the redevelopment, but it's $1.7 billion out of a $25 billion fix.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's relatively small potatoes. And, you know, it is interesting. We haven't seen the counties, for example, weigh in on this realignment proposal, which is a huge piece of the budget, both logistically, politically, and practically. But this realignment fight, I think, is one that the governor doesn't mind having. And he's gonna say, look, I mean, we can either spend this money to build, you know, bars where mermaids swim on K Street in Sacramento, or we can use it to fund
school. This week, by the way.
It did. So it's the Full Employment Act for mermaids versus teachers. You know, I think that's a debate the governor is happy to have. And this debate is not a discussion about whether or not a service is good and worthwhile in the abstract. It's about prioritizing things that people like. People like schools. People like fire stations. People like mermaids. We just have to pick.
Mermaids or fire stations?
Well, you know.
Yes, that project was funded with redevelopment dollars, as was made clear this week, along with a lot of others. I mean, good and bad. You can
places that Jerry Brown lives
yeah,
and
exactly.
has lived
the
worked.
The studio right. loft apartment in downtown Sacramento. He was a big pusher of it as the mayor of Oakland
and
redevelopment.
And he said that. He said, hey, look, this is a good program. I was able to do some good things. And frankly, I'm glad I was able to do those things before the state finances went into the toilet. I mean, he said that last week, you know, in front of the League of Cities. But he said, but when it comes down to it, there are things that are more important than redevelopment in terms of prioritizing government services for California.
What do you think about the notion, which was in a discussion I had with someone around the Capitol this week, that, you know, that really the issue, you know, not diminishing the concern locals, and these are really cities mainly, because, you know, as we've said before, redevelopment is a largely a function of cities across the state of California. There are some counties that deal with it, but vast majority right. are cities that do redevelopment. Not diminishing the importance of redevelopment and their argument, but this is a real political power game here too, because, I mean, cities control those redevelopment projects really without any limitations on what they do. They have a lot of power. There's a lot of political power involved there. And the cities have been the most vocal of the local government critics or local government representatives in the Capitol for the last year and a half, dating back to Prop 22, which was the ban on local government funding that was put on the ballot almost entirely by the League of California Cities.
Right, without the county support.
Without the county support, because it affected counties differently than cities, so thought a lot of folks in counties. And I guess I'm trying to get to what you were talking about too here. And now you're seeing this entire push coming from the cities, the League of California Cities, the Redevelopment Association people, the county people, they have some stake in redevelopment, but they're much more concerned and quiet about the realignment issue, seem to be working through it in a private discussion thing. The cities want to be much more public and angry about what's going on with their part of the budget.
And frankly, and it's an interesting difference in tactics. And from a PR perspective, I think the governor is all too happy. Now, look, I mean, we're going to talk about the poll in a little bit. And I think that, you know, the interesting thing about the redevelopment idea is that it has support on both sides of the aisle. This is not a clear partisan issue. Some Republicans hate redevelopment because they think that, you know, redevelopment agencies use eminent domain to seize private property. And then there are some Republicans who have spent the last couple of budget fights to try to fight for redevelopment agencies. And so but I think that talking to the governor and the governor's staff, they believe they have the votes upstairs to win this fight. And they think that public opinion is on their side. And, you know, and their basic challenge remains the same. Hey, look, this is a zero-sum game. You don't like us taking this $1.7 billion from you guys this year.
In this 18-month budget period.
Right. If you don't, then find it for us someplace else.
Right. And that was the message we got with the mayors. And the mayors all said, well, we agree. We're going to convene a working group. We heard all of this when they came to meet on Wednesday.
And you mentioned Prop 22. I mean, we'll get down in the weeds maybe as this goes on. But there's some question about whether the redevelopment agencies can actually give up the money under Prop 22. They might have to, even if they cut a deal, might have to dissolve themselves and reconstitute themselves under some different property tax formula. So, but that's
But we're not getting too far in the weeds to say this. I mean, I think you're hearing this as well too, is that there are two separate issues here about the future of redevelopment agencies in California. One is what the governor wants to do in this budget over the first 18 months, and one, what happens to redevelopment in the years to come after that. The $1.7 billion that the governor wants to take and push back to solve the deficit is the legal challenge issue. That's the one where there probably would be a legal challenge about Prop 22, because that money ostensibly balances the state's finances.
It offsets cuts in trial courts and Medicare.
But the point is that that's the one where you get into the legal dispute. Fewer people I have heard, and somebody's going to call me as soon as I hear this on the podcast, but fewer people I have heard think that the legislature is prohibited in some way from abolishing redevelopment agencies with the money in the future to go directly back to local services. In other words, because, you know, people have to remember the governor's redevelopment plan is two things. It's the money immediately for the state budget.
In the first year.
In this period for the 25
18
billion.
Months, whatever it is.
And after that, it goes to the locals. It's redistributed to schools, local government, et cetera.
On an old formula, existing
and
formula.
And that part, I think, is from what I hear, is not as legally dubious as the part about balancing the state budget in the first part.
Fundamentally, the question is, Prop 22 protects money for redevelopment agencies. But if the legislature abolishes those redevelopment agencies, then the money the governor's argument is that it refers to this old property tax increment.
Which is too far down in the weeds, but suffice it to say, it would stay on the local level.
Yes.
Before we jump to the poll, you were talking about the unlikely alliances or the things that don't hew to the conventional wisdom.
I think I know where this is going.
You know where I'm going.
Yeah.
And that is we saw a couple of Republicans this week standing out at a rally in support of in-home supportive services, the program that Schwarzenegger went after, that Brown now says has to be cut, that provides services to the disabled and others in their homes. They're workers who get paid, and the state has to pay the money. And that's been something that Republicans in general have been very unhappy with. And you had two conservative Republicans standing there saying, let's don't cut it this week on a rally at the Capitol.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It was very interesting. The press release almost was, you know, you see the press release, marching and Democratic state senator.
Right.
And then it says also joining us Assemblymember Paul Cook.
Right.
And I'm like, hey, wait a minute. He's a Republican.
And Brian Nastandi.
Brian Nastandi.
And I think it does sort of, you know, it is foreshadowing perhaps some of the future fights here in the next few weeks as we get closer to a vote on this budget package, that there are going to be folks that don't want cuts. And also, I mean, you know, if worst case scenario for the governor, if these taxes don't get on the ballot or don't pass, and they need to balance this budget by reducing the Prop 98 guarantee to schools, that needs a two-thirds vote as well. And so this is going to be complicated politically to navigate this budget package through the legislature and onto the ballot. But I think perhaps this PPIC poll, segue, provides a roadmap for the governor to do that.
And let's talk about the poll, because the poll came out on Wednesday night, and very interesting, I think. And you know, we're hearing people beat about the poll, as people often do when they don't like the poll result numbers, because we all know that polls are two things. One, they're a snapshot in time. You can't say for sure they mean something for the long run. And the second thing you can't say that you have to remember about polls is they are very dependent on the way you ask the questions, the order you ask questions, right, when you're trying to elicit opinions from people. That being said, PPIC is a statewide nonpartisan public poll. And so their findings, if you didn't hear them already, two-thirds of the people that they surveyed like the idea of a special election, want to have a special election, it appears. When you go beyond that, and they were read a description of the governor's proposed budget, which I'll put an asterisk by because some say that the description wasn't fair. I don't think it was unfair, but that's just me. 58% of those surveyed were generally satisfied with the governor's plan. 64% of Democrats were satisfied with Brown's plan. 57% of independents were satisfied with the plan. 49% of Republicans were satisfied with the plan.
And on the taxes specifically.
On the taxes specifically, yeah. And then almost there. 53% of everyone, 54% of likely voters favor the plan they would be voting on, which would be taxes, which would include taxes. Now, the challenge becomes is that when they were asked specifically about taxes later in the poll, pretty much every tax that's on the ballot, they didn't like.
Right.
So the question there becomes, what will the voters focus on if this election happens? Are they focusing on it as a package in which they're looking at the trade-offs, or are they going to focus on the individual taxes? And clearly, they're going to be camps on both sides trying to make that case.
Well, and I think you started at the exact right place in sort of saying two-thirds of voters want this special election, because that is—
Which is the first hurdle. Here.
And that's the first hurdle for Brown to overcome. I mean, and I think that in the State of the State speech on Monday and for the next few weeks, that will be the focus of the Brown argument is, hey— this is my plan. Let's at least give voters a chance to vote on this. Two-thirds, even Republicans want a chance to vote on this. Look, only 53% support the plan, but the issue is just giving voters a chance. Voters wanted an opportunity to weigh in, so let's give them that chance. Let's not stifle the voice of the voters. And I think that you've already heard that begin to come out of the Brown camp, and I think that that is going to be the focus of their arguments over the next few weeks. And as you know, and this poll seems to indicate that that would be a good idea.
And what I thought interesting too is that you know, when you talk to the pollster Mark Baldessari at PPIC, you know, he will remind you that when they asked voters before the special election in 2009 and the Governor Schwarzenegger special election in 2005, how they felt about going to the ballot, they were much less interested in having a special election than they are now. They were much lower numbers, right around the 50% number or even lower in some cases.
Right.
And so, you know, this argument that, you know, well, there's no way the voters want to do this. You know, they've already voted on all this stuff, doesn't seem to hold up there. I mean, people are willing to consider the issue. And as you said, right, you know, the issue is the next part. But just considering it, and that gets to that fundamental issue that I think Republicans in the Capitol are going to have to address here soon, because they've largely been saying there's no way we're even going to let these things go to the ballot for various reasons, tax pledges, the voters don't want them, you know, all the things that we've heard. Now faced with this, and if the governor starts to ramp up this with the public, State of the State speech, other things where he's talking to the public, then what?
Right. Yeah. And look, there are other questions about whether there are any consequences for them to say, you know, saying no, and whether, you know, a vote for this is actually a career killer because, you know, because the advocates on the right, whether it's, you know, radio talk show hosts or tax advocates like Grover Norquist or you know, officials within the Republican Party, you know, they think that this is a career killer for them to vote for this because there's been sort of a line drawn in the sand. We'll see if this poll changes anything, but that's the first hurdle for Brown to overcome. I think looking down the road, this poll provides an interesting clue, something that we saw in a PPIC poll last year, and then we saw this poll from a Democratic pollster, Jim Moore, that made the rounds a few weeks ago, about the framing of this debate, if and when it happens. It's clear, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was a strong majority of voters say they would favor increased taxes if they offset cuts to education. And I think that, again—
That's actually in the PPIC poll
yes,
as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was, what, 70%, 72%?
Yeah, 71.
So I think that this poll sort of shows the path not only to get this plan on the ballot by focusing on the issue to hammer on just to get the thing through the legislature, and then once it's there, how to sell it to voters. And I think that this is the script that we've already that the Brown administration has already hinted at. It's laid out here in the poll, and I think that you know this is the blueprint for the next 6 months.
Yeah, just to circle back on those numbers, 75% of adults oppose spending cuts in K-12 in this poll. Large majority oppose spending cuts in higher ed and health and human services as well, but K-12 schools was the highest. And 71% of those surveyed by PPIC say they are willing to increase taxes to spare K-12, with smaller numbers, but majority saying they would do it to spare higher ed and health and human services. You know, talking about framing, the other thing that is big on the framing argument is, and we've already talked about this on the podcast, but it came back again even to me this week with a listener to one of my radio stories on the California Report about the words tax increases, tax extensions.
Right.
And this, of course, was someone who thought that there's no way we can call them a tax increase and that I was being biased. Of course, the story actually had me using both terms. I used increase in one part and an extension in another.
And
let's just be honest here for a moment. They're both right. They're both right. It is an extension, yes, of taxes that are set to expire. But for people who were planners and really needed to know those numbers in detail, small businesses, I mean, I won't dispute that, who thought that the taxes were going back down on July 1st and had made some kind of decisions, they would view it as an increase because it would be an increase in what they were not getting. I mean— So
right.
Let's just get past this, folks.
I am going to use the terms interchangeably. I mean, look, but this is, again, part of the framing debate. The governor and everybody in the administration is on point. These are tax extensions. And I think that that's important when you look at the other result of the PPIC poll is that clearly Californians don't know much about the details about how their government operates. They think that the majority of money is spent on prisons. It's not. I mean, prisons is the fourth largest.
Once again, they have no idea, which then makes you wonder whether how much credence you want to give to the I support not cutting schools or raising taxes. You know, you worry about giving a lot of credence to what the public wants if they don't understand the budget process to begin with.
Right. Although
I do.
Well, but it gets to a political question too. I mean, if Brown is able to sell this plan as tax extensions in order to fend off or ward off cuts to education, you know, that's going to be in his favor. And if he's able to frame it that way to voters, that's one thing. If there's funded opposition on the other side that has a different narrative and can cause some confusion and cast some doubt on what the governor is saying, that's going to be a problem for getting these things passed.
So what do you think? I mean, are you getting any sense so far that, you know, one of the things I think we talked about on one of the podcasts before that we're all watching to see is that the big guns in California politics have largely held their fire.
Yes.
At this point. We have the obvious anger out there. We have some of the groups that support some of the social services programs and they have a principled stake, but they're not big political players. They don't have big money to, you know, launch a campaign against the governor. The anti-tax groups have a principled stake, but they don't have big money to launch a group. We've got powerful business groups and powerful union groups, and both have held their fire so far. What's your sense of how long they keep those guns in the holster?
Well, or
maybe they'll do it the whole time.
The focus grouping and the polling is already going on. I mean, it's already going on. And one of the big problems in 2009 is there was a split in labor. There was a split between SEIU, the service employees, and the teachers association. That split provided funding. SEIU spent a lot of money against the 2009 package. There was a strange alliance with SEIU and the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. That helped sink it. And so I think the first trick is to neutralize the opposition on the left, where a lot of the money is. And I think that's going to happen. I mean, my sense of talking to SEIU folks, who knows what the final deal looks like? And I think that's part of the reluctance. Brown was asked this week if he wants to bring pension reform into this discussion. And he said no, because I think that's part of the calculation he's making. On the right, I think it's, the money is probably from the business groups, the Chamber of Commerce and the other business groups that have some money to spend. And that, again, their response to the initial budget, as you said, has been muted. Whether they will spend money to oppose this plan, I'm not sure. But I think, Brown has tried to craft a proposal where everybody has some skin in the game and that everybody feels like they will have something to lose if these taxes are not extended or increased or ratified by voters in June.
And for the big business groups, let me just point out a number in the poll that I find interesting that I'm sure did not go unnoticed around these parts. When you asked people what taxes would they raise, they are not so hot on the income taxes. They're not so hot on sales taxes. They ain't so hot on the car tax. But 60% of adults said they would approve raising taxes on corporations.
Right.
And that cannot be something that people would have ignored out of this poll. And if you're the governor, it's probably not something to ignore, too, if you're talking to the business community. Look, I'm not proposing that, but the voters would say they'd go along with it.
And if this gets rejected, we're going to have to come back with something. I think it's true of the oil companies, too. Another big player up here, with a lot of money, spent a lot of money on an initiative campaign a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and the governor stayed away from an oil severance tax and those things.
Right, and isn't that the implicit message? You don't think there's been a conversation, hey, guys, I kept you out, I held you harmless this time, but if this doesn't go through, we're going to need your help to get this through, because if not, there's nowhere to go but into your pockets. And I think that I'm pretty confident that those discussions have happened explicitly or through intermediaries or directly. The governor's not stupid, and I think he understands politically how to the best path to try to navigate this through. Now, whether or not it's doable, whether or not it's successful, that's another question. There's some encouraging information here in the poll, but like you said, it's a snapshot, and we don't know the details of how this is going to play out over the next few months.
And the governor spent about, 20 minutes or so talking to the press corps on Wednesday, sitting around his picnic table-like conference table in his office. And a lot of you have already seen this in some of the news reporting, but you just couldn't help but miss the difference in the way that Jerry Brown has decorated the governor's cabinet room or conference room from the way Arnold Schwarzenegger had it decked out. This is a long room where the governor does most of his business. Even with Gray Davis, it was a very old, formal-looking, long conference table with big, comfortable chairs sitting around it. But Schwarzenegger had taken it to work these lovely velvet throw pillows with the state seal, with the gubernatorial seal.
The Conan sword.
Stemware that had the gubernatorial seal that he would be drinking coffee or tea out of. We go in on Wednesday. Brown has almost nothing in the office except for a long table that looks like a picnic table that's made out of, local wood, I think he said. And he set up his own similar desk in there with a computer and a chair. And that's it. And there's a bookshelf that Greg Lucas wrote about the books.
Right.
That
he didn't even mention the Borges stories, which are, they're great. But the Labyrinth. It was on the.
Was it?
I saw it on the bookshelf there.
But I didn't have time to look at the books.
Yeah,
I
got a quick peek. That one stood out.
But you just couldn't help but miss that. I mean, this is quintessential Jerry Brown. This is the guy. He's frugal. He's just not into that stuff. He's not into.
But he loves to have that as part of the narrative. That's why the press conference was in that room. There was no accident.
Again,
he's very calculating.
Sure.
And I mean, it's not a bad thing.
But I think in saying that is we have to be careful as to whether or not we think it's an act or whether it's him.
Yes.
And everything seems to be that it's him.
Yeah.
But he also is more than happy to remind you that that's who he is.
Look, he understands the value of symbolism and political theater. I mean, the fact that he's called for, you know, half the state cell phones to be recalled, you know, that's going to help him sell his budget plan in June. He knows that. And you know, it may seem like small, silly stuff to us that it's token symbolism, but that's the stuff that penetrates, that breaks through. And people, you know, not everybody follows this. As the poll showed, not everybody follows the details of the inner workings of government blow by blow. And something like that, you know, that lodges in people's minds and affects how they vote.
Well, what I was just going to say is that so when we were all sitting around the table and, you know, the jokes keep going about the hard surfaces of the benches rather than the cushy chairs and, you know, people don't like to stay long or they don't get too comfortable, which is a
right.
perfect metaphor for the times and him. And yeah, you're right. It's all stuff that he knows we're picking up on. But he was asked about the budget in the absence of the taxes. And asked specifically about this story that we've all heard that the Department of Finance actually has a Plan
right.
B budget that they've worked on that's all cuts. That's $25 billion of spending reductions. And he said, well, I don't know what exactly
he said. He said it's so horrible we don't like to release it. That's the exact quote. And yeah. it was unclear whether or not he was joking. I couldn't tell. I asked a couple other reporters there. I listened to the tape three times. I couldn't tell if that was a joke or not. He said they don't have it. And then he sort of dodged the question, said, well, we don't have it specifically, but you just multiply everything by two, but you can't cut welfare and health services. And so you're going to have to cut education.
The reason I bring it up, though, is you wonder if a scenario, if everything else isn't going well, is to put that budget out.
It's coming out. It just won't come from the governor's office. Mark my words.
There you go. Do you have it already, Anthony?
I do. I've done my own all-cuts budget. I challenge you to do the same.
All right. We'll be working on that over the weekend. Well, that's it for this week. Stay tuned. State of the State is Monday. I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about that. Maybe we'll do an earlier – nah, I wouldn't do an earlier podcast. It never seems to work. We can't get our schedules together. That's Anthony York from the LA Times. I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.